Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, oh. Betty boy.
Okay.
How we right. doing?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
I'm doing all right. I'm so good.
So,
you're wearing your Masters green. I'm wearing a Masters hat.
No, I know. I was going to start there.
Oh.
So it's supposed to be the opening round of the Masters today. And we'll see. Maybe eventually they play some golf, but saw the official Masters tweet saying, don't come here.
And what they did.
Don't do it.
And unlike normally when it's, you pores, stay out.
No.
It was just like, the weather will be a problem.
The pores is the only people they've discriminated against in their history.
Well, I would just like, they consider literally everyone who's not then poor in every way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Condoleezza Rice member.
Yeah, that's true.
Just throw that in there.
They're different now, okay?
Obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways.
No, hey, they're growing. No, okay. Yeah,
we know. We can leave it.
Yeah.
What's
Hootie up to these days?
I don't know.
Probably not.
Yeah. Whatever he's doing.
Again, we'll leave it.
Yep. They said, don't show up. Don't come park here.
Yeah.
Don't come anywhere near here because we're not playing golf for a while, if at all. It's raining. Maybe they get some holes in. Maybe they have to play a quadrillion holes tomorrow. The good thing about the Masters is it's a limited field, so you can make up ground pretty quickly. You are wearing a Masters hat.
Mm-hmm.
I got you a Masters hat.
Yep.
Were you wearing that yesterday?
I was wearing it not in studio, but when I was gallivanting about town, I wore the Masters hat you got me.
Here's the thing about the Masters hat that I got you, that I got myself, I got my father.
You tried to get it for J.D. Bunkus, and I pilfered it from him.
Yeah, I didn't get enough. Honestly, I spent $1,000 on merchandise. I messed up. I didn't spend enough.
It's the scariest thing for me about the one day when I do eventually go to Augusta is having to remortgage my home to pay for all the stuff I want to bring back from it.
And there's a couple of things that I was very pleased to have purchased.
Two of them
were stolen. Those are my prized possessions, so that sucks.
Still have your children. That's nice. There's two of them.
I didn't get them at the Masters.
Quite a story if you did.
No, I got this really nice golf jacket, this green jacket that is my go-to golfing jacket.
Yeah.
Love it.
Uh-huh.
Gotta say, I don't love the hat. I don't. You're wearing a hat that I guess Adam Stanley got for you?
Yeah, Sam McKee, he texted Stanley, I think it was last year at the Masters, saying, I need a rope hat. And it was in a group chat with me, which was like, obviously, I said, yeah, me too. So, Stanley.
No, that's a way better hat. I wish I had gotten that hat.
But so here's what it is that I alternate. I wore the Masters
just,
hat yesterday.
out of guilt, though, right?
What?
Like, if you were just...
No, I have two Masters hats, and I'll wear them both.
Let's be honest, right? You're doing that for my benefit. Like, because I can be honest, that's a much better hat than the hat I got you.
Yeah, it is, but I have two of them, so I'm going to wear one day and one the other. And if I was doing this out of, like, I don't know what, I guess, like, I can't think of the word right now, but reverse spite. Like, if I was to be nice, I guess. It's like, it's so foreign to me. I'm like,
what is
the opposite of hatred? being nice, right. I would have wore the one you got me if I was doing it, like, out of obligation of, like, Ben got me this hat. I better put it on today. But no, I like them both. I wear them both. That like very important appointment that I had to miss golf for. I wore it to said appointment. Yeah. So I love the hat you got me, buddy. Right. Thank you.
Your appointment went okay?
Yeah, all good.
Yeah. Did it go the way that I expected it to go? The one question that was asked of you?
There was without getting into way more particulars than we need to, there were like a couple other things, but more or less.
Yeah. All right, so...
We can talk about that in the break if you want, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not.
But there is some Masters stuff to talk about later on today.
Can I just read the official statement? Not the one that said, you poors, stay away. And again, everybody other than the Augusta member is a poor to them.
Yeah.
This is from 5 a.m. this morning. We continue to monitor the weather closely. Gate openings and tee times have been delayed until further notice. The first round will not begin before 9 a.m. And I got to be honest, selfishly... Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Because now I can just give you all of my attention.
Uh-huh.
Not that I was planning to be slightly distracted otherwise.
I mean, what are the first tee times? Just after 7 o'clock anyways?
Yeah. Guest time. It's like, you could talk to Damien.
I haven't looked at the updated weather report for Augusta National, but when I looked at it last night, it didn't look like 9 o'clock. That would be a surprise to me if they're golfing at 9 o'clock today. I think at the earliest, It's in the afternoon for a couple hours.
Which is, again, like, just selfishly wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Not so wonderful was the way the Blue Jays wrapped up that three-game series against the Mariners. They took two out of the three, and it is kind of found money when you go for the sweep, except when you're off to a slow start like the Blue Jays were with the 10-game road trip. And losing four of the 10 games, coming home 4-6 and getting back to 500 and a chance to go back over 500. And, you know, you got to be greedy when you're a team in apparently, once again, the toughest division in all of the major leagues of baseball. Because at the moment, I know they lost yesterday to the Orioles, but I don't know if maybe the Red Sox aren't going to be as much of a pushover as we once thought. But yeah,
thanks to Canadian hero Tyler O'Neill. Yeah,
man, I had some thoughts about, that guy not being a target, trade target for the Blue Jays as well. You don't think they could have used his thump in the lineup? I know he's right-handed, and he is oft injured. Like, he's going to spend some time the IL this season.
A completely imperfect player. Like, there's a reason. I mean, the Red Sox, they don't even try to get good players anymore, and they were like, get him. Mm-hmm. Not say he's not a good player, but there's some flaws there.
Yes, and he had, it seemed like played out his time in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Him and the organization weren't seeing exactly
how to
hide. Yeah,
they had other outfielders coming in, like the Jordan Walker and stuff like that.
So the Blue Jays lose a game that was very, very winnable. The bases loaded, two out in the ninth inning. Hard to get more winnable than that. That being said, that was not an offensively amazing performance by the Blue Jays. I mean, the only reason they were in it because Vlad hit yet another home run of longer than 450 feet. They were 0-6 with runners in scoring position. The starting pitching has been spectacular right now. And it's hard to be disappointed with the three-game series against the Mariners. You did what you had to do. You reset the vibes with the off day today going into a very winnable series against the putrid Rockies starting tomorrow. But, you got to be greedy. When you're a team that I know it's easy to forget with the way the Yankees have started and the narrative of the offseason. This is a team that's not only trying to get into the playoffs, but can and should be trying to win the division.
Yeah, it's honestly, for me, it's so much less about winning the division and not shooting yourself in the foot. And not that they did that by losing the third game of a series in which they won the first two. But if you want to be a good team, if you want to be let's get greedy. If you want to be a great team, you got to sweep a series every now and then. And having that available to you right there and not taking advantage. And we can talk about part of the reasons why that happened. I don't know. Does the rest of that game go differently if, say, you have, I don't know, just spitballing here, your setup man and your closer? Does the rest of that game go bit differently? I think it probably does. So I don't think this is like no time for panic. This is not disaster, but that's a frustrating loss. There is no other way to spin it. I mean, you mentioned it. I don't want to belabor the point too much, but Vlad has a huge moment at home, which could have been the springboard to a win and a series sweep, and all of a sudden you're off and running into an off day. So who knows how much that actually carries forward, but it's papered over to a certain extent because the rest of the game goes how it goes and extras happens.
No, you hit the nail on the head when you said the setup man and the closer, who I said going into this season, it's amazing to lose those two guys and still feel comfortable in leverage late in games, which has been proven correct, right? Chad Green has looked real good locking these things down. Holy cow. Jimmy Garcia yesterday throwing 100 miles an hour, which we haven't seen
before. Ton of whiffs, 4Ks.
Yeah, there's been some great performances out of the back end of the bullpen, but here's the problem. When, like, Chad Green's not available, that's an issue, right? And you get great length, as far as Yusei Kikuchi is concerned, right? Getting through six innings. I mean, he was dominant, too, but this is not a guy that's going to throw completers because of, it's not just the lack of command. He only had two walks here, so he just strikes too many people out. Yeah. Takes a lot of pitches to strike people out. Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
We're not complaining.
Yeah, it is absolutely fine. But
I like those outs.
For the first time this season, I think the Blue Jays can look at a game that was frittered away. And it's hard to say frittered away because they didn't have a lead in it. But yeah, you get a better chance to win in extra innings when you have a few more arms at your disposal, a few more high leverage arms. Nate Pearson with another scoreless outing. Jimmy Garcia, like I said, was dominant. Tim Mesa is supposed to be one of those high leverage arms. That's going to be, I mean, you see this every year with the nature of bullpens. Some guys have down years where you don't expect. Some guys emerge with great years when you don't expect. And at the outset here, it feels like Tim Mayes might be having one of those down years. And luckily for you, you have another lefty in the bullpen who's also, though, having a slow start in Yanisis Cabrera. But
should go shove somebody else.
Yeah, if they're without Tim Mayes and you got no Chad Green available for you in yesterday's game, that's a game you absolutely could have used Jordan Romano or Eric Swanson.
Yeah, one of the two changes the math of that game completely. I don't want to get too excited about it because Lord knows we've been down that road too many times, but another rock solid outing for Nate Pearson. Like if he can be that, just part of the equation, another live arm in the back of the pen, like we're done the world where he is going to be this super utility 2-3 inning shutdown relief. We're not living in that world anymore. The Blue Jays aren't.
Can he be a good reliever?
For sure. Yeah. Of course he can. All that stuff that made him a great prospect didn't go away. He showed it 3 years ago in a playoff game, coming in and cleaning up Ryu's mess. So you've seen it from him before. I think that the Mesa thing is the one concerning part of it. I mean, other guys, if anybody else in the pen comes in and stubs their toe, you go, okay, this is a guy being put in a spot. I mean, even Richards has been good for them for the most part, right? So if those other guys come in, I think the thing that complicates a little bit is that Mesa is a lefty. Now, this team hasn't typically used him, and, you know, it's like you got to face the three batters now. You're not having a loogie anymore. But they have kind of typically used him less than just as a lefty specialist or to go through those parts of the lineup. And I do wonder how the team kind of goes about it. But this is the thing. If the problem with this team in June is that they don't have a good lefty in the pen, that you can go paper over. The other things we have seen up to this point this year, and not so much in yesterday's game, although certainly reared their heads a bit, those are things that are harder to find. You know, going and putting three new bats in the lineup, that's harder to do than going and find your lefty piece to the bullpen if Mesa has turned into a pumpkin here, which I don't think he has.
I'm
not saying he definitively hasn't. I'm just saying you can't. I'm not writing him off.
You know what's not great? When a guy's like velocity's down 2 miles an hour and he's like, I feel fine. Like, it's actually worse. Like, no, feel bad. Like, why? Give us a reason. No, I feel fine. I don't know. I just can't throw anymore. Weird.
Should have said, like, it's got that new ballpark smell. Like, Kevin Gausman had the cold, and we all bought that. And I'm like, we should have bought it. There was the start last year, but don't need to lay it all out. But you should have gone with something like, I don't know, new ballpark smell. Kind of weird. They got to stop polishing it up so much before first pitch. It was a day game. Think about how freshly clean that would have been when the spit shine fumes crew was in there the night or the morning before.
The Lysol getting in my eyes, whatever. Yeah.
And for some reason it only affects him, but
whatever. It's early days, but that's not necessarily a guy you want to lose. You want to have at least one lefty specialist who you feel confident in. Right now Blue Jays don't have any. It's okay. Eric Swanson and Jordan Romano appear on the verge of returning. Also, I mean, the other massive takeaway, if you want to take positives out of it, and why wouldn't you want to take positives out of a loss, the rotation, it has looked dominant the last turn through the rotation, the last three guys at least. Barrios, Bassett, and then Kikuchi, as I mentioned yesterday. Now, this is a Mariners team that doesn't exactly look like the 27 Yankees. Guess what, though? There's a bunch of teams like that. That's okay. They're all Major League Baseball players. Rockies also not the 27 Yankees. If Kevin Gausman, and I think he's Kevin Gausman, so I think there's a reasonable expectation that he's going to be good tomorrow. That's 4/5 of your rotation that is real, real good. Gotta say, and let lightning strike me down if this is incorrect, not afraid of the pitching regression monster. Like, I'm feeling pretty good despite Kevin Gausman in his last start throwing some 89-mile-an-hour fastballs. He also threw some 94 at the end of that game, and it was freezing cold. And again, 12 months ago, the exact same start with the velocity down in Kansas City. I'm staring down the pitching regression monster.
Okay.
And I'm saying, not afraid. You're a fraud. Okay, fraud.
As
a wise man once said, fraud.
Yeah. Okay. There's no way this comes back to bite you. I was the guy kind of ringing the alarm bells on Gausman heading into the year to a certain extent. And
you're afraid. You're afraid.
No.
Just say it. You're afraid of the regression monster. Okay. I said, I'll be in the front of the line. I'll battle him, and you be behind me, cowering in fear.
I'm not afraid of him. I like have him on a leash, and I'm like, see this beast I told you all about? Look at me, look at me. I what I was going to say about Gausman, though, is despite how much I was ringing the alarm bells heading into the season, he had the exact same start last year. He was good in the first outing. I'm not going to worry until I kind of see a pattern with that. Chris Bassett is still the guy that I worry the most about in that regard. And wild to say, coming off the start.
And his velocity was up.
And his velocity was up. But he didn't look like that guy early on in that start. He had to kind of battle to find it. And that is part of the Chris Bassett experience. But that's part of the problem for me, is that it's always a bit of a tightrope. It's not always. There have been times where, you know, you see Bassett come out and he's shoving. He has dominant outings. But everything has to be so fine. Everything has to be so perfect. You need so many of his pitches to be working on any given night. Unlike even, say, a Kikuchi, just doesn't have the overpowering stuff. Now, he can get there once in a while when he needs it, but his overpowering is 94, 95. It's not 97 from the left side. So I don't think Bassett is going to fall off a cliff to the point where you feel sketchy about him as even your fifth starter. But I do think the idea that you're just going to have four lights-out nail starters all year long, let me, again, show you my beast, the pitching regression monster.
Yeah, you don't have four aces.
No, but I don't. But I think Chris Bassett was, I think he was as close to the highest level as you could expect from him last year. And just to expect a guy, again, like we've laid out these arguments a million times heading into the season, nothing has changed. The 200 innings last year, the 1 year older, it's a guy who, the second it gets a little less fine, he can run into a lot of problems. I'm still weary of it. And again, I don't think Bassett is going to be putrid, but I think you can really look at a 1-2-3 you're confident in, a fourth that's a bit of a question mark, and then a fifth, as we've been saying, that's really a question mark.
Yeah, big start for Bowden Francis this weekend against, again, a putrid Colorado Rockies team.
And it's here. Yeah. I feel like people will hear that and go, yeah, but out there,
yeah.
It's here.
Yeah.
Although maybe hitter's ballpark, a couple homers lately.
Yeah. I don't care what ballpark Vlad was hitting in yesterday.
Yeah, that's, could be at the Polo Grounds.
Yeah, straight. Well, and I mean, you say the Polo Grounds. In the corners, it was very short.
You're right.
Straight away center field at the Polo Grounds, that I think would have departed. Like, Willie Mays not tracking that thing down at the Polo Grounds. 459 feet is what they called it. And yeah, I don't debate this.
You can't.
No. I don't. I'm not of the same belief with that one as I was the one at Tropicana Field that went over the batter's eye, where I was like 450. I still think the one in Tropicana was more impressive. Like when you hit it over, like center field to me, is different than a pull field home run. Like, hey, taking anything away from that.
There's nothing. If he was left-handed, maybe you could talk me into, like, a pull homer is sexier.
Yeah, well, and also it depends on the ballpark.
For
like
sure.
In San Francisco, Barry Bonds hit it into the bay or into the cove, sorry. Yeah. Like
you didn't have to correct yourself. I would have been like, yeah, the bay. It's bay, water, obviously. You got dudes in kayaks.
It's McCovey Cove.
Okay.
Though.
Yeah, you're right. That's definitely the name of it. But aesthetically, dead center, straight as an arrow, looking like Bryson off the tee. Yeah, that's the most aesthetically pleasing bomb, unless you're just going to go like full Canseco and yacht one to the fifth deck or something like that.
Yeah, that would be nice if Vlad
I would take him up on that if he wanted to join. Also, quickly, dimensions of the Polo Ground, 483 to dead center. Right center, 449, so it would have got out.
Yeah, all right, very good. Vlad is off to a curious start. He's taken his walks. There's been some at-bats. You're like, that's awful. But he's now hit three home runs. Two of the three have been a bombas. That one, what, like 115 miles an hour off the bat?
It's crushed.
So he's hitting 200, but he has an on-base. He's got an on-base of 322. He took another walk yesterday. So, like, he's being patient. He's getting on base, slugging 420. Is he off to a good start, a bad start, or a meh start?
I think it's really important to see him hitting the ball hard early on, and maybe it shouldn't, but the two big bomb homers carry, for me, way more weight than they honestly should. I think seeing him connect in that way that just, quite honestly, we haven't seen, and I know he's not a 50-homer guy, not to say he could never get there, but, you know, like we've all heard the Miguel Cabrera comps. I think this is a statistically a fine start,
But with the thump he's showing in those two instances, I think it allows you to squint and talk yourself into it being better than it is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think eye test-wise, there's still too many uncompetitive at-bats, which is not ideal. But, yeah, it's hard to not look at the on-base percentage being more than 100 points higher than his batting average and him starting to get a reputation maybe as a guy that's a little more patient, yep, that you have to come to a little bit more. And it's not lost on me as well that the two massive home runs he's hit, like, again, like, well done. Like Davis Schneider, hanging breaking ball. Mm-hmm. Not everybody hits that into the seats.
You hang it.
Yeah, you got to bang it.
Yeah.
And he has done that. I'd like to see him connect on a few more fastballs, mm-hmm, and hit those out of the ballpark and pull those not on the ground. But yeah, the on-base percentage, it must be noted. Like, that's taking his walks on the reg. Like, to me, that is, it's, you don't want this guy as purely, like, you don't want him Kevin Biggio at the moments that Kevin Biggio has received the most criticism where it looks like that's all he's up there to do is take a walk. But I think if you put the league on notice that you're willing to do that, it pays dividends later on in the season that you will get more center cut fastballs, that you will in hitters counts get more strikes. Yep. And then if you continue to do what you did with yesterday's hanging breaking ball, yeah, that's the recipe for a good season.
It is. I don't want to derail the conversation, the point you're making, but you mentioned Kevin Biggio standing up there like a statue. Great job by him getting the grazedest of grazed by that pitch yesterday. The hit
I was a little surprised Mariners didn't review that. It seemed right between his feet.
I couldn't believe it. Sometimes this is a lesson for all the kids out there. Fake it till you make it. He just acted like he'd been hit. There was no like grimace because you can't oversell it. Then ump goes, what is this? The Oscars?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think they would say that, but in their head maybe. But yeah. I could not believe that when I saw that. But back to Vlad in terms of what he's done. You do need him to be selective. And I think even if that means there's an overcorrection to being more selective earlier on in the season, I would much, much, much rather him err on the side of that than a guy up there just hacking at everything, trying to be his dad. Like, I would way rather him the occasional time strike out looking than trying to hit balls off his shoe tops. And he hasn't been doing that, but selective. The reason he was an amazing hitter coming up, yes, the bat, the actual bat skills, yes. But it was the eye. It was 100%. The pitches he was able to make it's you like, throw him.
This guy's not his dad. You watch. Yeah. You watch the way he
not
works in at bat.
Not his father's son.
Yeah. And his dad's a Hall of Famer. But right. This guy could be better because, you know, he'll take his walks.
Uh-huh.
Haven't necessarily seen that outside of one season. Uh-huh. Man, yeah. Would have been it's asking Ernie Clement to come up with a base hit in that situation is just asking too much.
It's
right?
A lot. Like,
he's already had the pinch hit home run to win a game.
Thing.
It's
you
like
can't
Davis
two of those
Schneider,
in a week.
It's a two-run home run off Josh Hader to win a baseball game. It's too much. Like 13 games into the season to have Ernie Clement and Davis Schneider like individually win you three games all by their lonesome. And he, you know, made contact with it, and there was a moment there I was like, it's going to bloop it, and it's not. It's asking too much.
See, it's funny that maybe it's just the way we view the world, and I guess both of these things like would have been good for the Blue Jays, but you were thinking maybe it's going to bloop in. I was thinking, it's going to be there. Springer-Bichette play is what I was thinking when that happened. I'm like, nah, not enough air under it. Yeah. Drats. These guys won't collapse, and someone won't have to be stretchered off the field. Oh, well. Being honest, that is immediately where my head went. Going, oh my God, is Rodriguez going to kill him?
Oh no, he didn't.
He didn't, because they were not remotely close to each other.
Yeah, I still have my questions about the bottom of this lineup, but I will say that
that's smart. Good job.
there are enough pieces on the bench that you can, you know, there's some things you can do late in games. Yep. And Daniel Vogelbach being able to
big
take
sexy.
A walk.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess at this point in the season, the way he's swinging the bat, you're not going to pinch hit for Ernie Clement. But eventually, I think we're probably going to be in a spot where, he's also a guy that you pinch hit for. Mm-hmm. Davis Schneider running for Justin Turner in that moment. There are guys that do things that, yes, okay, on an everyday basis, you don't feel maybe the most confident that you're going to get offense out of the bottom half of this order. But, you get enough guys going at the right time and you feel comfortable enough mixing and matching and just riding the hot hand, and then late in games being able to play the matchup game. Okay, I can see that working.
Yeah, there are enough pieces. I think you wish you had one more
piece that didn't have to get mixed and matched. That's the problem. There are a lot of nice complimentary pieces. There are a lot of, like, there are very few people on this team where you just go, what? What is the utility? Well, we have the moments with various players, you know, IKF, despite his, you know, three knocks the other day. It's like there are people who you ask, but when you look at it, to a man, each guy kind of has a job. And again, like, I think you would like to improve on some of the roles ahead of those guys, but I think you can mix and match, play the game in different ways, depending on what you need out of an at-bat, depending on also the way a pitcher profiles. Like, you just have different types of hitters there as well. Like, you got more contact guys. You got a guy like Biggio is happy to work a walk. So, yeah, I do like the options there. You brought up the Schneider pinch running. I don't know if you... Well, I mean, I'm sure you noticed, like, when he had to run back to second base. It was a bad read, but, and maybe maybe you're just, like, brainwashing me without even trying, that I'm just making excuses for your sweet boy Davis, but he slid back into the bag, and then he had a look back at third base, and it could have just been hand in the cookie jar, like, ooh, okay, I didn't do a bad, guys, I'm still out here. But it almost looked to me like, and he broke so aggressively, I do wonder if he was getting, like, waved over by the third base. I was dying to see, like, a super wide shot, and I don't know, but it was not his fault.
I mean, you were making excuses for him.
I literally wrote down, this does not absolve him. He should make a better read if this is the case. Mm. But the way he looked back, it did make me think.
I didn't think that, but you might be right.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was actually thinking the opposite, because he did put his head down. He's like,
it was so confident on a ball that he should not have been that confident on. I'm just assuming, unless he's just like a really bad base runner, TBD, I don't know.
Yeah.
He just did it with such confidence. Yeah. I feel like he had to have someone at least co-signing that.
Yeah, I will say off the bat, I thought that was a base hit too. Alejandro Kirk, who's off to a very slow start, and interesting to see Danny Jansen hit a grand slam in Buffalo in his rehab appearance yesterday for the Bisons.
Shocker. Danny Jansen clutch hit. I, for one, am shocked.
Well, honestly, as few hits as Alejandro Kirk has gotten, the fact that he has seven RBIs is remarkable. He actually has been clutch with, like, the singles, but, like, the two-out RBI singles he's come up with, and he almost came up with another one yesterday. But, yeah, it seems clear that when Danny Jansen returns to this lineup, which might be as soon as, I guess, tomorrow against the Rockies, that he's getting the lion's share of the opportunities, and they're, because of the Justin Turner of it all, not as many DH days available. And at this point, why would you force the issue with Alejandro Kirk? He doesn't need to be in the lineup. No. But, yeah, like, that this is a guy that didn't exactly carry over all the promise and all the positive things that were said about him during spring. He hasn't looked like that guy yet.
No, he hasn't. And I think, you know, like, there's certainly an element of it with how much catching he's been asked to do. You can look at that as, you know, I'm sure some people hear that and go, making excuses for the guy. I wouldn't say that if he was playing center field every day. It's a taxing position, and, you know, I don't want Alec Manoah to come for me, but it's like Alejandro Kirk is a guy who, like, it's like, I'd be laboring back there too. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think when you look at,
you're scared, you're running scared.
Well, yeah, he's a big boy. What do you want? Okay.
Yeah.
So I think when you look at it, he is not a guy that you absolutely have to force feed DH at bats to. Oh, I know. I didn't even mean to do that. But I think that he is a guy who, again, much like, he is better than all the players we talked about in the bottom half of the lineup there. But much like them, he provides a utility. He has, as a, you know, 1A to Jansen's 1B or whoever you want to look at it, they provide a good utility to kind of not even cancel each other out, but just give the team an extra bat off the bench on a day when it is. And again, it just goes back to the Dalton Varsho thing of it all. If Kirk can be a competent hitter and you can get what you get, we think, out of Jansen, it's just one more reason why you want Varsho to be able to go back there, even if it's just a, we're going to pinch run for this guy late in the ball game. Varsho's out today. It just would provide you so much more utility. So it's never going to happen. Everyone's told me to stop talking about it, but I won't, because I guarantee you there's going to be, I don't know, 5 games this season where you want to pinch run Kirk, but you already got both catchers in the game. Santiago Espinal's not here to be the emergency catcher anymore. I imagine that's Varsho still, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think the guy that's done at the major league level, you would assume, is at least the emergency catcher. Last thing from this game for me, Justin Turner has first started first base, and Dan Shulman on top of that, I think he said that. It's like, yeah, maybe we see Justin Turner for the first time today at first base. And lo and behold, Vlad DH Day, Justin Turner at third base.
His guess.
Yeah, might have had some inside information there.
Maybe.
Third start in the field for Turner is first at first base, but he's also entered a fourth game as a defensive replacement. Now, there are a bunch of off days. Next Thursday, they're off too.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that plays into it. But pretty clearly, this team's best offensive lineup is not with Justin Turner at DH. Like, you get to throw a Daniel Vogelbach in there at DH, or, you know, get either Vlad or George Springer off their feet. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, this team is better when Justin Turner can play the field. I didn't expect it to happen that much. I wonder what it indicates that it is. It's happened a lot more, honestly, than I anticipated early on in the season.
It's happened more than they anticipated. I forget where we got it from, but there was this 10 games number bandied about for him. They're burning through money. It's the first night in Vegas. Yeah. They're not going to have anything left by the time July rolls around. They're going to go, oh, hey, do you think you guys could bum me a Justin Turner in the field day? Right. I don't have any more of those left. I swear I'm good for it. I get paid in Justin Turner in the field days next week.
Yeah,
they're
right.
They're spending them all. And, hey, don't hold them. The idea that, you know, we talked about this with Shulman yesterday, that whatever bullets you spend on Turner in terms of playing him in the field now, maybe you have a more diminished version of him in August. We cannot have a worry about August right now, especially the way the season started. Go sweep the Rockies. Or take two or three and a few more series here. All of a sudden, we can have a different conversation about not thinking about August, but having slightly longer picture thoughts here. This Blue Jays season, I know, crazy to say, but a team that was 4-6, it was on the verge of unraveling, and you needed Justin Turner. Or it's not about needing Justin Turner. It's about needing your best offensive lineup. Him at DH does not allow you to do it. You got to mix in more days with him in the field.
Yep.
Even if it means you're going to be broke and destitute of Justin Turner in the field days.
You're scratching. You're like, oh, God, I need some of that Justin Turner in the field.
You don't want to know what I'd do for some of those.
Anyways, all right, before we take the break, Orioles were down 5-0 at Fenway Park, and it's Fenway Park, and it's the Red Sox, and it's the Orioles. So they were able to come back with 7 unanswered runs to win 7-5. But the more notable thing was Jackson Holliday getting the call up. And I'm less sentimental about these things with second-generation baseball players, but there's nothing that gets me in the feels than that manager meeting.
Oh, God, I sent you my thoughts on it.
Yeah.
Of him sitting there, Jackson Holliday, the like most prized possession of any Oregon baseball right now, sitting there. It's like, hey, I definitely don't see that little camera sitting in the corner there. Okay, can you please tell me I'm going to the big leagues? That's all that video reeked of to me. It's like, it is nice. And I felt so much differently about it watching Julio Rodriguez's last year or 2 years ago or whatever it is when he broke in with Jackson Holliday. Yeah, it's like the fact that now all the other stuff I do get super sentimental about, like the pictures of him on the field or like I think it was Kemp who got DFA'd to make room for him on the roster. And he's talking about, I remember his dad and uncle bringing him around all the time. And that stuff gives me the feels. But the guy sitting there who knows he's destined for the big leagues.
I don't know. I thought the way it started where they're like, you're doing a great job, just keep doing what you're doing. Like, I was like,
call him into the manager's office to be like, hey, keep doing what you're doing? Probably could deliver that with a pat on the butt at the cage.
I suppose if I were playing devil's advocate here, I'd be saying that Jackson Holliday was told, hey, just perform well in spring and you'll be on this team.
Right,
and then
what
he
happened?
Did that, and he was not on the opening day roster. And just continued to mash in AAA. And lo and behold, made his major league debut yesterday. He had an RBI, but 2 strikeouts, 0-4. Obviously, it's untoward, the service time manipulation stuff that happens in Major League Baseball.
What are you talking about? They just called him up when they felt he was finally ready.
I don't know. It's just ugly. And I thought, you know, that we have bonus pools now for these pre-arb players was going to put a little dent in that. Not so much. But again, if I was going to play devil's advocate, and this was not by design, and I still think it's probably for the best for the sport, if just like the best players get to play at the earliest time.
Agreed.
But when you have this, it does make like a regular season game more of an event. Like, go back to the Vladdy debut, go back to the Bo debut. those are events, and they're events on opening day if they play in the first, but that's already an event.
It's crowded.
You get multiple events. Like, imagine Austin Matthews, and this is a bad example because out of the gates.
Yeah, it's like, how dare you?
But imagine it was just like Austin Matthews Day, and he falls out of the sky in October.
Well, okay, we do. I'm not going to compare the Jackson Holiday hype
to Matthew Nyes.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We do kind of get it in hockey with the college guys, but generally speaking, it's like a college free agent guy. Yeah. It's much less sexy. There was a little buzz around Nyes. I'm not comparing the two, but it's like that is the one time we do get to feel it for a minute in hockey. Also, it's just like, can you imagine Connor McDavid rotting in, I don't know, Bakersfield or whatever the Oilers farm team is?
Yeah.
But the thing about it is, I agree with you. It does make it. I don't know if MLB had always had this circled or if they just made it a special event, but it was like their free game of the night on MLB TV and MLB.com. Mm-hmm. Good job. All we ever do is complain about leagues. What was it? I forgot there was like a massive Oilers game this year and it was just on Sportsnet West or whatever it was. Like,
you
blackouts suck. Okay. So the idea that you made an event to this, the other thing that I think, or I don't know if you saw this going around, I know it's like a pretty commonly understood thing, but just to see it stated this way. So Holiday, he bats ninth, plays second base. The entire infield drafted by the Orioles org. The outfielder has two homegrown players and a Rule 5 draft pick. The only guy in the lineup last night that even played in the majors for another org was the DH.
Yeah, Ryan O'Hearn, who's found money.
Right.
Like, he was a nobody for the Royals, and then they're like, oh, yeah, no, he hits cleanup for us.
And it's one thing when the Pirates do that. Well, a bad example because they're good now, I guess. I haven't checked in 2 days, so I don't know. Maybe the shoes or the slippers falling off there. Yeah. But it's one thing when, you know, your Pirates or your also-Rans do this. This is a good ball club that just won the division last year, and these guys are really in the peak of their powers. No, it's not.
It's not.
Actually, I take that back. They're not at the peak of their powers yet. Jackson Holliday is like 5 years old.
Yeah.
It's going to be better.
No, but maybe he stinks. He's 0-4 with a couple strikeouts. Can't handle it.
I'm going to bet that between Henderson, Rutschman, Mountcastle, we know what he does here, and Holiday, that two of them are not going to suck. That's just going to be my bet. And that's, it's not enough to paper over, but boy, it certainly helps.
And the Orioles were bad. So a lot of those guys were like top of the first round type picks.
Jackson Holiday was first overall, I think.
Yes, he was. Jays have had their chances. Hey, and they turned Austin Martin, fifth overall selection, into Jose Berríos. But
if they could have drafted like Jose Berríos at 26 years old and just had him be the first over or the fifth overall pick, they would have gladly have done that. Yeah.
Good job. But there's some first round whiffs in recent memory.
Oh, the Manoah getting here as quickly as he did papered over a lot of the development stuff that you're kind of getting at here.
Yep. Good for the Orioles, okay? And it'll be interesting to see
Red
them
Sox
in person.
Lost. I feel like that makes a lot of people happy.
I guess. Blue Jays are dead last. They're the only team under 500 now in the American League East, which, again, is beastly.
Why do all the Toronto teams have to play in the hardest divisions?
Like, I don't know, because they're in the Northeast.
No, even the Raptors, it's like, I'm not going to sit here and say like the Raptors division is a world beater, but it's like you have the Sixers and the Celtics who have been two of the better teams in the sport. Again, not like ultimately, but even them, that's like the least of the hard divisions. Forgive me, I don't know what's going on in MLS with TFC's division. I'll look to you for guidance.
It's a division.
Yeah, it's a world beater, or there's teams in it, either one.
Well, you know what it is? It's the Eastern Conference, so they do have the New York teams in it. It's the New York of it all, right? Yeah. Like, there are, in pro sports, when you have the biggest market in the world.
Because I'm thinking of, like, the thing that makes me think about this the most is the Leafs. So they don't have any New York teams to deal with. It's all the non-New York teams.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, it's just been a terrible run for Toronto sports of being always in the toughest division.
How about this? It's not fair. And all Toronto sports are cursed. And same for the 2019 Raptors.
Of course. And the Blue Jays, if they were in the Central, we would think about them in a completely different light.
Yeah.
Just marinate on that.
Well, and we just had an opportunity, it seems like, slip through our fingers to have a second Toronto NHL team because the Coyotes, it feels like, are dead. We'll get into that next, as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
4759 The Fan, Ben and Spray Gunning. This time is different. It really does feel like it, but I'm going to need to see the body, okay? The Arizona Coyotes, according to multiple reports, and we'll talk to Frank Cervelli after 8 o'clock. He had one of the early reports on it that it started with, hey, the NHL has a couple of different schedules.
Yeah.
One of them has the Coyotes not playing in Arizona next year. And then it was like, a couple minutes later, it's like, the board of directors have been told that this thing could be happening imminently, that the Coyotes are moving to Utah this offseason. That's all well and good. We've heard things kind of similar to this. Nothing as explicit as this, and nothing with a timeline as short as this. But again,
next week.
Yeah. But it's been a decade of these type of things, so I'm going to need to see some real pen to paper. I'm going to need to see some moving trucks before I really believe this is happening.
Moving trucks is a good thing to see. What I was thinking is the definitive thing of the Coyotes dead is, I don't know if you've seen it, but like Paul Bissonnette will go to Coyotes games, and he wears this like Coyote like hat almost. Mm-hmm. I need the owner of the Utah Jazz, who I think's name is Ryan Lindsay, who's like going to be the guy involved with this Utah bid. I need him holding that up like it's his trophy. God. Like, look it. I got the pelt.
That'd be a bad move.
Nah, I know. Well, I don't know. Actually, I was going to say like it would endear him to the locals, but I feel like the people of Utah would go, no, it's not very nice.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
I mean, that's the thing, right? I don't feel as bad talking about it in these terms because I don't think there are real Coyotes fans listening to this radio program.
Certainly,
but they're
not.
There are obviously real Coyotes fans, and, you know, without the Coyotes, you probably don't have this generation of Leafs teams.
Job done, so.
Right, you did that, and although Shane Doan's kid, he's coming up too, and it's going to be different for him if he's not playing in Arizona.
Yeah,
I feel bad. I feel badly for the real, true hockey fans in Arizona, of which there obviously must be.
Well, I was surprised to see this, but just in, like, you know, every time a story like this comes out, there's always the, like, oh, but think of the fans angle. And, you know, I think we all picture a Coyotes fan, and there's, like, an image of somebody half paying attention and not caring. But every team has diehard fans. But my understanding is Phoenix does have a relatively thriving, like, rec.
Yes.
Hockey scene as well.
Yeah, this ice den thing is a real thing.
That is something that is... The idea of growing the game, it's such a, like, wishy-washy term, and anytime you do something that you think is good, you can just say, this is going to grow the game. But that is actually a thing that has happened there,
which
and I do
kind
feel
of
bad for that all the people in that market.
Which is kind of impressive that there's anything, considering, well, one, the climate. And maybe it's that's the reason why. It's like, people are like, get me out of the sun.
There's no snakes in here? Awesome.
Yeah, the snakes.
I do feel like it's...
People running down the streets in Phoenix, like, running away from, like, herds of snakes.
Again, I just put myself in the sensibilities of if I just stayed in the hockey rink, no snakes could get me. I think.
Probably true. But
I feel
not
like they'd be very slow. Like, cold-blooded animal, they'd be very slow in there, at least.
Yeah, maybe. Anyways.
No, that one I'm confident in. Snakes would be slow in a hockey rink.
Yeah. What I was going to say is... It is, like, it's impressive that there is any kind of hockey community at all, considering, one, the climate and the lack of historical relevance when it came to hockey in that market. And, two, the Coyotes have, like, stunk.
Yeah, forever.
Pretty hard right from the get-go. And they had the Gretzky era, which is, like, you got some star power, no doubt. But a lot of stinkage throughout the course of their entire history. So that there's, you know, that there's an Austin Matthews or a Matthew Knies and... I mean, Josh Doan to a lesser extent because he's, you know, well, he's also Shane Doan's kid. Yeah. So, like, come on. All right. It's a little different there. But, yeah, that there's anybody there that's into hockey at all is kind of impressive considering the length and breadth of that Coyotes team's existence. Thank God we're, like, cooler heads prevailed when it came to this land purchase attempt that was going to happen in the summer, which we had to wait until June to figure out. Although, like, the mayor of Scottsdale is like, you can't do that. Don't do that because there's no water. But also, if they had consummated that, we would have had to wait another 3 years for them to continue to play out the string at Mullet Arena.
It could not happen.
Thank God we're not doing that. I feel horrible for Quebec City, again, who, like, has a ready-made facility.
Gotta stop dreaming, though. It's never happening.
No, clearly it's not. I also, the wheels were spinning. I mentioned it before the break. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess this Utah thing emerged. And Utah, it feels like a more legit hockey market, obviously, right? Like, the people play hockey there.
Yeah, I've heard Bourne talk about this. And the site of, like, one of our country's great great Olympic moments.
Yeah, of
as
course,
well.
Of course, and maybe
Gio
just
Sakic
and
Scots.
And I don't know. Do we get fined by the IOC?
I hope not.
For even, you know, attempting that.
I don't
that
know
call?
What you're talking about. I was just saying Joe Sakic scores in a like slightly different voice than my own. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so maybe it gives us an excuse to see those highlights again. So that's sick. But yeah, I can't lie to you. I was thinking, man, what an opportunity this would have been if, like, the Utah thing, if there was not a ready-made facility for the Coyotes and, like, we just got to get out of here. Yep. Like, somewhere, like, that, no offense to Winnipeg, but that's kind of what happened with the Thrashers. Like, we got to get out of here. It's like, Winnipeg, your building's too small. It's a market that doesn't necessarily seem all that sustainable, but we got to get out of here. So can we go there?
Yeah.
Like, if the league was desperate, I mean, in another circumstance, could it not have been a second team in Toronto playing at Scotiabank Arena? And then, like, maybe down the road you build another facility. Yeah. But, hey, Clippers, Lakers, the Kings, they've all made it work at one arena facility in Los Angeles. Could have made it work in Toronto. I'm of the belief.
Yeah, there's always a way. Like, with the amount of money that would be at stake on all sides of that equation, there certainly is a way to make it work. I would eventually come to love the rivalry that would form with whatever second Toronto team, should there ever be one here. I would eventually love it, but I loathe it at the outset, the thought of it. And I realize it. It's like,
really?
Hey, yeah, you're a big city. You want to have two teams. Like, it's the home of hockey. You should have it. And the rivalry would be amazing.
It's not going to be Leaf fans, though. It's going to be those fans of...
Yeah, but here's the problem. Is there... It's just... I know how this is going to work. Is they're going to become the Golden Knights. And everything's going to be perfect. Oh, well, and I'm going to have to look at the world's most insufferable people who are tough. Like, I just like to be a fan of something. Mm. Who are like, look at my shiny Torontonians hat that I have here. I always hated the Laughs.
I mean, it'd be worse. Yeah, exactly. It would be that type of person. It's not like I don't have a rooting interest. It's like I have an anti-rooting interest against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It'd be that guy who, by the way, like a pox on him ever being shown on the broadcast again. It's like that guy and his daughter who are always showing up at Leaf games. They have season tickets with the opposite jerseys. Yeah, never again. Please, like, if I could just make a request of all broadcast entities, never again on my television. I don't need it. Much like I didn't need, this is a completely different non sequitur, I didn't need the, like, following Cal rally down the high five tunnel after the Jays, like, basically lost the game yesterday.
We'll get to,
like,
Cal rally, too.
Yeah, I know. I just saw that, and I was like, I don't love that.
Yeah, I would have loved more NHL hockey in the city.
Yeah.
I mean, it only makes sense to have.
And the rivalry would be amazing.
NHL.
But
franchise.
They would for sure win the cup first.
Well, obviously. It's not going to be the Leafs. So, if they ever won a cup, it would be first. So, it's a shame. Utah, though, like, if we're just picking places out of a hat, like looking at a map and putting pins at places where it's like, oh, NHL hockey, that kind of makes sense there. Probably wouldn't be Sunrise, Florida. Probably not going to be Scottsdale, Arizona. Not going to be Tampa either. And they figured it out. It seems like a good fan base.
Because they won.
Not going to be San Jose. Yeah. I might actually be Utah. Like, if we were drafting American cities to have an NHL franchise, Utah might be... Like, Salt Lake City might be in the top 10.
Yeah, you're making a lot of good points. You're just asking the wrong guy, because I'm like the team with a full 40-man roster at the Rule 5 draft. I'm like, nope, I'm good, actually. We have enough.
Yeah.
Is my, like, actual opinion on the matter. And that's not true. I know.
No, it is. It's absolutely true. What are you talking about?
No, the NHL, like, as blind as I, or as much as I dislike the way they kowtow to the states, I'm not blind to the reality that the best thing to happen to the league is for... Well, I mean, like...
The best thing is what I said. Another Toronto franchise? Here? Yeah, the players, if there's another Toronto franchise
that's
announced
thing. That's
yesterday?
The best thing for the league in the immediate thing. But the way to, like, that doesn't exponentially, again, I don't actually believe in this stuff. But if you're somebody that believes you need to expand the foothold of the game, the number of people
that.
Who care.
No, we're done with that.
You know, you think, because I was thinking about this, the idea, I still am a believer... And, man, what a double-edged sword this is. I am still a believer that if Austin Matthews has his Sidney Crosby run, and I don't just mean, like, scoring a goal against Canada to win the gold medal, but that would have to coincide with team success as well. Mm-hmm. I do think there's a world where he becomes, like, Captain America. Mm-hmm. And then you throw in the 70 goals and all that. And then I do wonder if that... It's not going to be Gretzky going to the Kings, but I do think it can be a bit of a sea change in that regard.
I forget, like, this was a nice little hypothetical that we did back in the day. I forget what your answer was. Mm. Like, would you have taken a Leafs cup if it meant the Americans win the gold?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty clear, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, because Canada will win the gold again.
Yeah.
I think. If we can find a goalie.
I got to tell you, I'm looking at minor hockey situation in Burlington.
It's not.
Oh. Goalies are not, like, falling out of trees. In fact, yeah, my kid's rep team doesn't have one for next year.
Okay.
So.
He looking at a position change, maybe? Certainly not.
No, not if I have anything.
How dare you?
All right. When we come back, John Schneider? People don't like him? At least one guy we know for sure.
Controversial figure.
Leafs Devils tonight as well. We'll get into that as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.